Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Everyday Health Hacker Podcast. I'm Mike Herzing, and this young lady next to me is the awesome Dr. Lisa Liao.
Hi there, Mike. Welcome back.
I am back, and everybody's back, and we're having a good time.
Yes.
And we're the world champion city. There
yes,
we go.
Yes, just in case you guys didn't know, we are the world champions.
That's right.
So, everybody, eat your heart out.
That's right. Dr. Liao is Chief Medical Officer right here at Meridian Health Institute in Sugar Land, Texas. Our goal is to provide you with information that you can use to make informed decisions about your health. Now, this week in response to some listeners' emails, we're going to talk about medication shortages. And there are some out there. And actually, they've been out there for a while, right?
They've been out there a while. I mean, our practice has been dealing with medication shortages actually pre-COVID, from high blood pressure medications to ADD, ADHD medications, and including the most recent, which has been a diabetic medications that seems to be just an interesting desire that everybody wants this particular drug. And it's an injectable. It's an injectable that they use on a daily basis for diabetes that is not actually for type 2 diabetics.
Oh, okay.
So it helps them to lose weight. So that's one of the other reasons. There was a couple of, I'm going to say, retail pharmacies that were having difficulty with their contract, so it wasn't even available at this major retailer.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, what do you do? Or what do you do when your insurance says, you know what, we're not going to cover that? So as physicians, we get that information almost like at the time that they're going to refill. So we might not get that until the day after that it's been refused. And interesting enough is that the pharmacy doesn't call us to tell us that the medication was refused. It kind of just goes into cyberspace because we send e-scripts out, and then it has to be our patient that lets us know, hey, my insurance is not going to cover this. What are the alternatives? So that's the nice part about having text messaging and email, you know, besides just a phone call to get that information to us. And hopefully, as a patient, I always encourage everybody, if you're having trouble finding a medication, is call the insurance and get your formulary, because the formulary helps us as a doctor. And I promise you, every insurance has a different formulary. And there are some insurances that have a separate insurance for their medication. So that's a whole nother beast that we have to tackle to get patients their medications.
Okay, so if you take your prescription in and they said, by the way, it's back ordered, we don't have any.
Correct.
Okay,
that happens
a
lot.
And then they just stop. It's silent.
Correct. The communication does not come back to us, the doctor.
It stops
right
there. So then you say, well, what do I do? And they say,
As a patient,
and then you're going, well, okay, so they should need to go back to the doctor.
Correct.
But then you guys can't go out there and call pharmacies for them.
Well, the nice part is that we're not calling pharmacies. We pretty much have a list and know which things are possibly on back order, and we're able to say, you know, hey, if you get to the pharmacy and this is on back order, give us a call, because then we're going to do X, Y, or Z choice. So back when we had Almisartan, Telmisartan, Valsartan, all of those had a problem with the production line, and we had to switch medications. And I was like, let's look at this as a blessing. This means that we can change medications, and you might even need less. Because
right.
if you've been exercising, you've been losing weight and doing all these things, why don't we just try something else? So we might go to a whole different class of medication.
Okay.
But with our patients who might have ADD, ADHD, whether they're adolescent, college age, or even an adult, you know, sometimes they'll have the 30 milligram, but not the 10 milligram. You know, what do you do? And as a doctor, these are Schedule II medications. So we have to be very cautious and how we write them. You know, in most states across our country, we have something called the prescription monitoring program that we actually have to check every single time we write a prescription for these types of medications. So for those medications, we actually will have a staff member call, cancel the 20 milligram and switch it over maybe to a 10 milligram to where we write take two. And we're having a constant conversation. It's why it's so important for our patients to have a good relationship with their pharmacy as well as their doctor. Because with those people, the pharmacist can say, hey, we have this in stock. Because pretty much if you call a pharmacy, they're not going to give you information as to what is and what is not in stock until they get a prescription. If you have a good relationship with them, they can say, you know, we have the 10 milligrams in stock, not the 20 milligrams. That's important information to get back to us as doctors.
Okay, so you've got some of these new medications that mm-hmm. are obviously the ones that they're not generic yet, so Correct. They're the expensive ones. And they're the ones that they're trying to make their money back for, you know,
for all the research.
For all the research and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. And they're usually the expensive ones. And let's say they don't have that. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're that's out. Then you try to go back, you know, the second generation back or the third generation back, and try to find something that's going to work?
What's really interesting now is that it's a great question, because for most classes of medications, there is more than one medication in that class.
Okay.
And usually those particular big pharma will make a contract with the insurance companies, making a tier one, two, or three.
Okay.
Tier one is the most preferred. Tier two and three, we might have to prove why other medications didn't work. Okay. And as a physician I've been doing this for almost 28 years now, is that you kind of have an idea when a new medication comes back. I don't know if a lot of you out there are in my generation of Celebrex. I mean, when Celebrex first came out, you know, you had to try three medications before you could prescribe Celebrex. And one of the reasons we were able to get Celebrex through was because maybe that person was about to go for surgery, which that was safe to take in surgery, whereas a Motrin, Diclofenac, Advil was not. So there was different reasons that we would write a letter to prove this is the reason why. I mean, it would be lovely to say it's because I'm a doctor and I said so. That just doesn't work in today's climate. So we have to have a reason, which we call a letter of medical necessity. And sometimes I'll ask a patient to write a letter to the insurance company as to the reasons why they should have it. And then I'll utilize that information as well and attach it to mine to say why it works. And what's important is with some of these medications, it is not just the livelihood and feeling better. It is also that they're not able to function to go to work without certain medications.
Sure.
So that affects not just themselves, but their family. And that is their livelihood.
Some of these new medications are like life-saving, and
Correct.
They're just awesome. And they're like, I mean, people that are like, before this stuff
happened,
I don't know what I was going to do.
Correct.
You know, I mean, this is kind of stuff. And it's great now, but then you got to figure out the price.
You have to figure out the price. And, you know, when people have, especially, you know, a lot of you all know that I have rheumatoid arthritis. And with rheumatological illnesses, they like to do infusions. I mean, now for high cholesterol, they want to do infusions. And there is a business model that is based on infusion clinics. And while it's good for some, it's not good for everyone.
No.
So there is, you know, we want to be price conscious. But what I'm looking for as a person who's a patient as well is I'm looking for transparency in prices. There was legislation that came mm-hmm. through federally that we're supposed to have price transparency. However, you know, here in Houston, which is one of the largest medical centers in the world, is that there's a lot of hospitals that are still not posting what their prices are. And if you look at one of the studies that just came through, in fact, it came out 2 weeks ago, and it was showing that some of these hospitals are $50,000 difference for one surgery. And that's based on the same time, which means the same amount of time,
mm-hmm.
the same amount of nurses, assistants, and surgeons. And that is not for the surgery, the hands of the doctor who trained to do that. That is for the room. And that, I think, is very important, because we might want to go to the hospital that's just down the street because that doctor has privileges usually in two or three different hospitals. So that's important. When I had surgery last year, I was asking, you know, what is it going to be for X, Y, and Z? In other words, what is the cost for the physician? What is the cost for my day? What is the cost for the room? What is the cost for the surgery suite when they're doing, and it's usually a per hour rate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a flat rate. It just kind of depends on the facility. And these are important things that a lot of people don't know.
Did it offend them? A little?
And I encourage everybody. I know that everything's electronic and they tell you to write it, and I'll ask them to print it out. I'll actually take my pen. I'll mark it out what I don't accept, because I want to know what to expect, because when I'm recovering, I don't want to have this price shock and now I'm having a whole new stressor that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
The key is having, you know, price transparency, which is what I always ask for, is that I'll write that out. So they actually had to legally write me a letter saying, before we do this, this is what the price is going to be, because I demanded it. However, a lot of patients don't know to do that.
Mm-mm.
Our patients, I'll have a checklist before they go into surgery so that they know what's going to happen with the medications before, because today when you go to the hospital and you're going to have a surgery, they may not write the medications for post-op because it's a day surgery. They may not, you might be in the hospital for 3 or 4 days and you're not going to go home with post-op medications. You might have instructions, but they'll probably go to your primary care physician and say, you write the medications, which we just need to know. If it's a Friday afternoon at 6 o'clock and you're being discharged, there's a lot of pharmacies that may not be open for that evening. And that's not fair to the patient. You should be comfortable after a surgery.
So in other words, we need to find out if we're going to have, if I'm going to have a knee replacement again, mm-hmm. like I had, I should be able to go to them and say, what's it going to cost?
Correct.
Period. I mean, what's Correct. My total cost in and out?
Correct.
Drive away or walk, limp away.
And it's always good to be able to say, okay, what is my day cost for in the hospital to have a room on the orthopedic floor? What is my cost for that surgery if we look at the average time of, 2.5-3 hours for that knee replacement? What is the cost for the surgery suite for that preparation time, pre-op, post-op, and during the surgery? Because it's all based on times, which hospitals look at it as units. So we want to know how many units, because that does come down to, yes, your insurance is going to pay for it, but not everybody has insurance. Not everybody has the same type of insurance. And you still have to look at what the cost effectiveness is if the doctor has the hospital privileges at the hospital just down the street. Because there's 17 hospitals, I believe, on Fannin Street, which is here in Houston.
But they should not be offended, and they should do this for us.
And if they choose to be offended, and again,
too bad.
A person has to choose to be offended.
Right.
You can choose not to be offended and say, I'm just asking for information. And, truly, you get more with honey. Just be really nice. Be very sweet. I'm planning for my family so that we can have a plan to attack this. And the nice part is most hospitals will have a payment plan where you can do that over 10 months, 12 months. So you can ask the financial officer. One of the difficulties with a lot of things that I hear from my patients is that financial officer doesn't talk with them until the day before their surgery. And that's stressful. That should be something in the planning of the scheduling.
Yep.
So when you go in for a scheduled procedure, that's when you need to start asking these questions.
All right. So, we're running out of time.
Yes.
So guys, if you have any questions, please email us info@everydayhealthhacker.com. We'll be glad to answer anything you do. Actually, these folks here will actually answer all of your emails.
Yes. We look forward at info@everydayhealthhacker. Have a blessed day.
As always, on behalf of Dr. Lisa Liao, the great staff here at Meridian Health Institute, thank everybody for listening and watching and doing everything else. Please subscribe. We would really appreciate it, and have a great week.
Have a blessed week.
We went over the time a little bit.